When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramelides, joined as ever by Sid Lowe. Hello Sidney.
Hello Philip, how are you?
I'm okay. Now, we should tell the listeners that we are recording this on Sunday afternoon evening because for reasons beyond our control, we couldn't actually record in the normal Monday slot, which means that Sid is joining us from the Estadio Civitas Metropolitano, where this evening Atletico Madrid and Barcelona are playing the biggest game of the weekend. Sid will send us a voice note from the future a little bit later on in the podcast discussing what he sees in the game tonight. But if you can hear some rather excited Spanish journos in the background shouting when they really could just talk to each other at a normal decibel rate, it's because Sid is in the press room at the Civitas Metropolitano. Sidney?
I'm here early enough that there shouldn't be that much shouting, but the TV company that is covering the game in Spain, that is, has just turned up. So they are shouting greetings to each other across the room. So hopefully in a minute, whilst they've actually said hello, they can, be a little bit quieter.
Things will calm down, hopefully. Fingers crossed. And we've got lots to tell you about on this podcast. We'll talk about the football in just a second. We want to obviously plug our Patreon, patreon.com/TSFP, where you should be joining us for loads of extra content about Spanish football. It's only around €4 a month and you get, well, hours and hours and hours of extra content per month for your buck. So it's a pretty good value. We also want to tell you about what we did on Friday. We went up to Bilbao and recorded a Bilbao special because Athletic Club are doing so well in La Liga. They're on the Copa del Rey final as well in 3 weeks' time. And we thought it's a good time for us to go up and speak to people about what makes Athletic Club so special in Bilbao. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. There will be an Athletic Club Bilbao special dropping in your podcast feeds this week. So hopefully that will be a good listen. Right, Sidney, shall we discuss what's happened so far on match day 29?
Yes, good idea. Shall we start with the absolutely monumentous piece of news that has only just happened?
Did Oviedo win a game? Or?
No, Almeria did.
Oh, Almeria did, yes, they certainly did. Let's tell everyone the results and then get into it. On Friday night, Real Sociedad beat Cadiz by 2-0. Cadiz unable to follow up their memorable victory last week against Atletico Madrid with another big scalp. Then on Saturday, Mallorca beat Granada by 1-0. Real Madrid overcame Osasuna pretty comfortably at El Sadar by 4-2. Vinicius Jr. stealing the show once again. Getafe beating Girona by 1-0. You were there. And Athletic Club beating Alaves by 2-0 and at the time of recording are in a Champions League spot. Then on Sunday, Celta Vigo got a victory in the first game in charge for Claudio Giraldez, their new manager. The new manager bounce in very much in evidence with their 2-1 win in Seville and very much in evidence with Almeria because, as you said, Sid, after 31 games, 28 of them this season, Almeria finally managed to win a game. It was the first match in charge for new manager Pepe Mel, and he saw them beat Las Palmas by 2-0. There was also a 1-0 victory for Villarreal against Valencia in a regional derby. Villarreal, 4 consecutive victories now in La Liga and 9 matches unbeaten and really doing quite well under Marcelino. And at the time of recording, Rayo Vallecano are currently playing Real Betis. So if you hear me whoop like a small child, it's because Betis have scored. And if you hear me, Rayo have scored. And if you hear me groan and smash my head against the wall.
Also like a small child.
Yes, almost like a small child.
If your behaviour is like a small child in any of the two extremes, we know
it means goal. It means goal. Yeah. If you want, Sid, let's talk about Almeria then. I mean, because what we witnessed was absolutely historic in terms of their inability to win. Nobody had ever gone 31 La Liga games without a victory. In came Pepe Mel in a really sort of strange and unforeseen managerial change, replacing Gaisca Garitano with 10 games to go, and bam, they've got their first win today. Extraordinary.
Yeah, I feel like I should be singing Ole, 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 Pepe May, because there is a fantastic clip of a small child serenading him on a TV show when he was manager of Real Betis. And yeah, in truth, we didn't see the point in this change. That if you are bringing in a manager like Pepe Mel, which is what they are doing, till the end of the season, with no suggestion whatsoever that he's your long-term coach, rather that he's just someone to steady it and basically see you through to the end, in a season in which you still haven't won after 28 match days, and really and truly you know you're down anyway. Even if you were to have an upturn now, you don't think you're going to survive. And yet here we are, first game, first victory. To be fair, those victories have felt like they were coming for quite a long time. We've said lots of times, they are not the worst team in Spain. They are the best worst team ever, because they really were on course, and actually I think still are on course, to have the lowest ever points total. No one had ever had a winless run as long as this, but it has.
Well, they're
had...
on 13 now. 13 is the historic low points tally of Sporting Gijón.
Oh, I thought it was
17-98.
Is it only 13? No, wow. 13. Okay, yeah. So they are not going to be world record holders, well, Spanish record holders in that sense. So Sporting Gijón continue to be the worst team ever, and I say that without any, you know.
Stop smiling.
I know. It's made an impact. Now, look, I think what we said when we were talking about this the other day is that if you are in a situation in which the dressing room relationship is difficult, in which there is tension, then I suppose you might as well make the change, if only to make sure that the damage doesn't get worse. In terms of a genuine belief that this is either a manager that you're betting in for the future, because they have said, at least in terms of the contract they've given him, that that's not the case, or that you think there's a chance of surviving, it didn't make much sense. But look, today is a really, really big deal for them. Now, I floated as a kind of partly tongue-in-cheek recently the idea that maybe you reach a point when you know you're down that you'd almost rather not win so that you can be, you know, have this incredible record, or maybe you'd rather just win on the final day kind of for the fun of it and for the comedy element. But this, you know, they will feel a lot better about themselves today.
They will. Didn't think we'd be starting the podcast talking about Las Palmas Almeria, but there we go. A historic victory for Almeria. Let's talk about Real Madrid's victory against Osasuna, that 4-2 triumph for El Sadar, with Vinicius Junior scoring twice. He really is in extraordinarily good form, Sid. He's scored in 4 consecutive games now. He's on 12 league goals for the season. He had 10 in the whole of last season, so he surpassed that tally. Brahim Diaz also scored, and Dani Carvajal also scored for Los Blancos. We should mention Ante Budimir, who scored for Osasuna, is on for 15 goals for the season and having quite the campaign. But it was I guess it was all about Vinicius yesterday.
Yeah, it was. And I think this is one of the key elements. When we look at what may happen between now and the end of the season for Real Madrid, I think the emergence of Vinicius is really, really important. Now, obviously, maybe not in the league title race, because they're almost certainly going to win it anyway. Although, of course, the fact that they're in that position is partly because he's now back in the team and playing well. And he was absolutely vital in the game that really defined this and really made us all think, OK, that's it. It's done, which is when they beat Girona, and he was absolutely fantastic that night. Now, the reason why I talk about it, the emergence of Vinicius, which sounds like a stupid thing to say, is of course that actually his impact on this season compared to previous years hasn't been that great because of injury. And since he's returned, he has just been phenomenal. And he is the guy, I think, even more than Jude Bellingham, and obviously earlier in the season it was all about Jude Bellingham, that gives them something that no one else has, that has the explosiveness, that has, even in the games when he's not playing particularly well. So, for example, he didn't play, I didn't think, very well in Valencia, but scored 2 goals. And so you've got this effectiveness to go with everything else that he brings, the electricity. And I think he's the most, in that sense, the most exciting player around, because he's so, so direct. He's very, very skillful. He makes a huge amount happen. And you look at him now and you think, it's not just that he is very, very good, which is obviously the bottom line. It's also the type of talented player he is. And you think, for example, about their chances in the Champions League against a city team that controls the game the way that they do, then a player like Vinicius, who's explosive, who can run at you if you're dominating possession, if his team is dominating possession, but also run beyond you if you're the team dominating possession. He can be the person that catches you on the break much more than anyone else. And I think he, in the Champions League at least, if Real Madrid are going to continue and maybe win it or get to the semi-finals or the final or whatever, then I think it's going to be about him. He's a absolutely phenomenal footballer, and I think he's getting better, because I think his decision making is better than it used to be. I think his awareness of what's going on around him is better than it used to be. And as I say, that other interesting element, which is what's happened over the last couple of weeks, is those moments when he's not maybe as explosive best, the ability to sort of appear in the right place, I think, is really quite interesting. Now, on the face of it, that seems a bit obvious and a bit simple, but I'm not sure it is, you know. I think it is a change in him, and I think it is something about, I don't know, maybe it's about reading the game or understanding the game slightly differently than the way he did even as recently as a year ago.
This felt like a big win for Real Madrid, didn't it? Like a really, really taking a huge step towards the title win.
Yeah, because to use a cliche, and it is a cliche, but it's a cliche and it's there because it's true, this is the kind of ground where you could see Real Madrid slip up. So you think about it, you think, well, Real Madrid are going to win the league anyway, it really doesn't matter. And you think, yeah, but, you know, imagine they don't win in Pamplona, because that's perfectly plausible. And then, you know, the gap is cut by, let's say for argument's sake, they draw and Barcelona win or Girona win, and the gap is cut by a couple of points. You think, well, maybe there is a title race there. But obviously, A, you've got the fact that they won. B, you've got the fact that Girona were beaten. And, of course, you've got Barcelona here tonight against Atletico Madrid, which isn't to say they won't win, because they may well do. But Madrid, that's got a kind of momentary threat, has now gone. And I think the response was good as well, because it's not just that Madrid won. It's that you looked at this and you thought, actually, you know what? They're just too good, aren't they? You know, there was never really... Even when Osasuna scored and levelled it, I didn't feel like... I don't know, maybe this is me, and maybe it's my interpretation, and it's not entirely objective. I was watching that thinking, I just don't see a scenario in which Madrid don't win this game.
Hat-trick of assists from Fede Valverde as well, who's been pretty consistent this season for Real Madrid. Not scoring, but just doing the work that he needs to do.
Yes, and I think work is part of the key element to this. Fede, I think, I don't know what you think, but I think the way that Madrid have set up this year, partly to try to accommodate Jude Bellingham, and rightly so, by the way, you know, don't take that as a criticism, the fact that I'm saying they're trying to accommodate Bellingham, I think has led to a slightly narrower and slightly deeper role for Fede Valverde in a lot of games. Now, he's still got the lungs, he still covers a lot of ground, but he's not playing quite as high up the pitch, and he's not playing quite as wide, I don't think, this year as he has in previous years. You know, we've seen some games when it's been effectively him and Toni Kroos almost in parallel, hasn't it, in the middle of the midfield, and I think that's had an impact, but he's a really, really important player, and obviously this is partly about that transition, which, to use Ancelotti's words, that energia thing that he keeps talking about, trying to get an energetic and dynamic midfield. Although, of course, the big caveat screaming at us at the moment as I say this is that Toni Kroos has been so fundamental to it. But I think that has been part of the reason for the impact on Valverde, because if you want Toni Kroos to play that kind of that central role, that pivot role in the middle of the Madrid midfield, you need to protect him, I think, personally. I mean, and I suspect that what Ancelotti has done suggests that Ancelotti would agree with me on that. And so that has meant, what does that mean? Well, it means either Tchouaméni plays alongside him, or Valverde does, or at least Valverde, nominally to the right of him, kind of drops in and plays a little bit closer to him, or at least does some of the work for him to protect him, and maybe takes on that mindset, to use Ancelotti's word, of pessimism rather than optimism in the way that he plays the game. And of course, one of the reasons for that is that we've seen quite a lot of Tchouaméni having to play at the back. I must admit, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I think I would be right in saying that Tchouaméni must have played, what are we? We're in week 29. I reckon he's probably played, what, 24 games this year, maybe? And I would say probably only 17 or so of them have been in the middle of midfield. And so you've seen, I think you've seen a knock-on impact for Valverde there, and as I say, and also because of the conditioning that Jude Bellingham
pretty
has.
Pretty good, Sid, off the top of your head. He's played 23.
Well, that wasn't bad, right? Yeah. And I would, as I say, I would imagine of those 23. I mean, I'm speaking off the top of my head again, but I would say what, at least 7 at centre back, right? More or less.
Well, we've already seen that the top of your head is a pretty accurate place. I would definitely agree with that.
It's not a very well populated place, but it's an accurate one.
Let's move on and talk about Getafe against Girona. You were there. Girona losing their fourth consecutive away game. They're no longer the top scorers in the division. Why, Sid? What's happened?
Right, I'm going to try and avoid the obvious answer, okay? And I'll come round to it in a minute. I think on this occasion, and Mitchell was I thought Mitchell was ever so slightly, I wouldn't call him prickly, but he was pointed post-game. And he said, look, we created sufficient chances to have won this against a team that's really, really good. Against a team that likes to step really high and tries to take the ball off you, and we want to have possession, and they try and stop you from having that. And yet there were moments when we were able to push them back, and we were able to take advantage of that and create chances, and they didn't take them. There's a Dovic chance, which Sodia saves. And I must admit, in the stadium, it looked like a really good save. I've watched it back on TV, and I think it's a really poor header. I think you get anything like decent connection on it, I think you score. So I think that's part of it. I think you've got just kind of a sense of teams having seen them a bit more now, treating them more as a team that, right, you go and defend it against these guys. Treating them more as a team that you fight and you're aggressive against these guys and you try and stop them. And then to come to the obvious answer, which I'm trying to avoid, and as I say, it was one that I think Mitchell was trying to resist as well post-game, is there is a basic thing, which is, at some point, this was going to happen, wasn't it? At some point, there was a slight overachievement from them. There was going to be a regression to the norm at some point. Maybe not completely to the norm, because let's not forget something. They are still second. They are still second, aren't they?
At the time of recording, tonight. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's still a monumental achievement. And Mitchell allowed himself to say something last night, which I was surprised that he said publicly. He said, if we don't get a Champions League place, it'll be a big blow. Un golpe duro. It'll be a tough blow to take that. And I think they still can. But of course, you look at the teams behind them that are very, very strong teams. And the points total is not huge now. So they do have something to fight for. And implicitly, I felt yesterday, post-game, I felt like Mitchell was kind of implying that the players need to buy into this. You know, not to believe themselves that the season's done. You know, that after the Bernabeu, the season was done, and there's a kind of a, if you like, an emotional climb down, and trying to tell them you still have something really, in fact, he used this word, historic to try and achieve.
Wow.
And so that should be momentum.
You have to tell them, shouldn't they? I mean, they know that, don't they?
I don't think you necessarily have to tell them, but I think maybe you do have to reinforce it, because I think when you had the season they've had, and there comes a point where you think, wait a minute, we could actually win the league. And you go to the Bernabeu and you don't just lose, but you get beaten like that. I, to be honest, think emotionally it's natural that there's a bit of a climb down. And it's natural that maybe it's not so much you need to remind them that they've got this Champions League place to go for, as you've got to remind them that they've got this Champions League place that they have to fight for, that is also at risk. You know, this could still be taken from you. Don't let that happen.
Well, let's see if they can finish in the top four. They've got a real battle on their hands, though, Girona to claim a Champions League spot, not least because of the form of the mighty Athletic Club de Bilbao, who won last night against Alaves by 2-0, both goals scored by Gorka Guruceta, who's now on 15 goals in all competitions this season. The only other player born in San Sebastian to score 15 goals in a season for Athletic Club is the wonderful,
the
wonderful
lovely Adolf, right? Yeah.
But yeah, 13 league goals for Gorka Guruceta, didn't necessarily see that coming at all. Last night, Athletic Club rode their luck in the first half an hour with Unai Simon saving a penalty for Alaves and John Guridi missing a really good chance. But after that, they went into, I was going to say top gear, but they moved into a gear which was just far superior to Alaves. They're fourth. They are absolutely flying, particularly at home. And we were up in Bilbao and we were speaking to someone within the first team squad in Athletic Club, and I suggested to them, you know, it feels like when you play at home, you almost feel unbeatable, guys. And I said it particularly in the Copa del Rey, but you know, you almost feel unbeatable. And you know, no one associated with the club is going to say that, but watching them, you do get that feeling, don't you? They're so difficult to beat at San Mamés.
Well, there's, you know, the best way of expressing that, feeling unbeatable, that just that sense that this team will get you at some point.
Yes.
There's a nice line. I was reading the match report in Correo Vasco this morning, obviously the local newspaper, and it said, that feeling that we've had so many times when we play Real Madrid, now other teams are having it with us. That, you know, Alaves can come into a game and play for half an hour and play really, really well. As you say, that Guridi chance is a great chance. And then the penalty, and literally it's the next move after the penalty that Athletic score, and just that sense of, these bastards are inevitable. You know, these guys will get you somehow. And as you say, after that they then stepped into another gear, and I think they then took control and didn't really suffer. But this is the nature of A, of having good players, because you've got a goalkeeper who's capable of saving a penalty. Then you've got a player like Nico Williams capable of creating the goal. And he's not the only one, by the way. He's the like the last link in a relatively long move. And so well taken by Gudetzeta, who we've talked about him before as having this kind of sort of a almost a facilitator's role for the other forwards. But this was him playing the number nine role and taking it really
do you
well.
Do you want to tell everyone about what you said and how it's been vindicated?
Yeah, I'm feeling quite cocky about this. Yeah, I mean, I've been saying, I said on the podcast whenever it was months ago that I sort of saw him almost as a Benzema figure. Now, obviously,
and what did I do? I think
level.
I laughed in your face.
I think you might have laughed at me. Yeah. And my point was that, you know, this is a guy that kind of vacates space at the right time, facilitates the people around him, allows the other players, particularly when you've got two wide players like the Williams brothers, to kind of come in on diagonals to arrive at the far post because he's drawing defenders out the way. And so there's an element of what Benzema does there. And yeah, the cocky comes from someone at Athletic who's very qualified to say this, saying, "Yeah, that's pretty much it."
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And the players talk about that as well. I mean, I think some of them call him Benzema. So, yes, Gorka Gudetzeta with two strikes to give Athletic Club yet another home win. Next up for them, a trip to the Bernabeu after the international break, and then it's the Copa del Rey finals.
Yeah, which I must admit, I don't know about you, but I feel like it might be a trip to the Bernabeu with a B team. I'd be amazed if they risked more than four or five guaranteed starters.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I mean, there's 6 days between. You just think because of injury, potential injury? I mean,
you're
going to be tired. You're going to be all right.
No, they shouldn't be tired. You've got international break now. Some of them obviously will go with the Basque national team. Some of those that don't go with the Spanish national team. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Five of them are going
with
the
Spanish national team. Spanish national team. I just think it's so monumental, that Copa del Rey final. It's so big. And you go to the Bernabeu. I'm not saying you're guaranteed to lose anyway, but you probably will lose anyway. I'm not saying they, you know, I don't know. If I was them, right, I wouldn't risk anybody.
Yeah, fair enough.
But then maybe it's not a good thing to now have a break and then have a game that you could almost treat as a break. Maybe you don't want to go in the Copa del Rey final with that degree of momentum having been totally... I mean, is this the worst timing for them? It might be, to have an international break
potentially.
Now.
It's good timing for us, though, right? We're ready for an international break, aren't we, Sid?
I think we are, to be honest. Yes.
Tell us about Oviedo, what happened with him.
Oviedo drew 1-1 with Racing Santander. Really good game. And actually, you know, let's just link this to the Copa del Rey final as well, shall we? Mallorca have a very good goalkeeper. They always also have a very good second choice goalkeeper, who, of course, we saw save penalties in the shootout in the semi-final.
Yes.
Dominic Grief. Good grief. Making those saves. They also have an absolutely brilliant third goalkeeper who's currently on loan at Real Oviedo, just as Andre Lunin was, 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
And he, Leo Roman, played really, really well in the first half, made a couple of good saves. Oviedo had a couple of good chances as well. And then the second half, I realise I'm giving our listeners a lot of Oviedo here for what's essentially a largely irrelevant 1-1 draw in the second division. But I just want to say this. The last half an hour from Santi Cazorla was out of this world.
Really?
What a footballer
he
is. He was absolutely knackered at the end. And they couldn't quite get the breakthrough. But it was one of those where you just, there's a guy on the pitch who's just
so much better than
everyone
else. Yeah.
Just give me the ball, boom, 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 boom. It just didn't quite come off, but he was wonderful to watch.
Well, that's great to hear. Great to hear. So there we go. That's what's happened so far on Matchday 29 in La Liga EA Sports. By the way, if you're looking for something absolutely useless to spend your hard-earned money on, might I point you in the direction of gambea.com/TSFP. That's gambea.com/TSFP. We've teamed up with our friends at Gambea to produce some really quite stylish TSFP merchandise. You've got a lovely, lovely T-shirt inspired by the Spain 1994 World Cup shirt. And you've also got some TSFP socks available. They are limited edition and limited time only. They have extended the period by which you can buy it. So check that out, because they won't be available forever, we don't think, unless lots of you keep buying them, then they will be. But gambea.com/TSFP. So, Sydney, you go off. Why don't you watch Atletico Madrid against Barcelona this evening, and then
good idea.
Tell all the listeners your deepest thoughts about the game afterwards. Does that sound good?
It sounds like a plan. I will make the most of the slightly long walk from the stadium to the car at whatever time it will be to produce a tremendous monologue on this potentially very, very exciting game.
So Sydney has just witnessed Barcelona beat Atletico Madrid by 3-0 at the Civitas Metropolitano. Let's get his thoughts. Sydney.
Well, I suppose it had to be João Félix, didn't it, in the end, who was going to score the goal that set Barcelona on their way to a victory over against Atletico Madrid. It was actually striking that post-game, Xavi Hernandez had said that he was absolutely clear that João Félix had to start. Bear in mind that we're talking about a player who's only played 60% of the minutes this season for Barcelona, who hasn't been starting in recent weeks, only played 10 minutes against Napoli in midweek in the Champions League. But Xavi had no doubt that he had to start, and he described him as having been extra motivated for this, that he was a player that really wanted to demonstrate what he could do and wanted to be decisive in the game, and of course was in the end with that first goal. That said, of course, it's not just about João Félix. If you look at the game, I think the performance from Robert Lewandowski was exceptional. Two assists and a goal in what is a really big, I mean, this is genuinely a very, very big win indeed for Barcelona. The fact that they went away, kept a clean sheet against Atletico Madrid, who've been scoring loads and loads of goals at home. The fact that they scored three themselves against Atletico, a team that, yeah, we know that defensively they're not that great this year, but that's still to score 3 goals at the Metropolitano is extraordinary. Of course, to win there is, I mean, this is a team that had 40 or 42 points this season that hadn't been beaten there all season. In fact, hadn't been beaten there since the last time Barcelona went there. I'm aware that there are contributing factors, and I think there's no doubt at all that Champions League games in midweek were contributing factors. Not least, you see that in the starting 11, the absence of Koke, I think partly because he'd run 17.5 kilometres in a week, of Antoine Griezmann, who had had the ankle problem. They both came on, of course. I was surprised to see Memphis Depay not play, that Atletico went with Morata up front, sort of on his own, although with Riquelme alongside him. I was a little bit surprised about the structure of the defence as well. And yet, the curious thing is, I don't know how it felt to you guys watching it on TV and stuff, but certainly in the stadium, I thought the first half an hour, half an hour is about right, 25 minutes, half an hour, Atletico Madrid started very much on the front foot, very much on top of Barcelona. Barcelona really, really struggling to bring the ball out. And I thought one of the really interesting things about it was, and this is possibly conditioned by the absence of Christensen, who pulled up in the warm-up, and so Barcelona didn't have that deep midfielder. So Gundogan had to play much, much deeper instead of just off the front, where, of course, his passing is more incisive and more significant, albeit I think he plays quite well deep, but it's not his natural role. And in that first half an hour or so, I thought Barcelona, this team that's defined by the midfield, there was no midfield at all. They had no midfield, like almost, I mean, almost totally absent. And they, it was because I think they were, Atletico were putting a man on every man. There was no real way out when Barcelona got the ball from deep positions. They didn't really have anywhere to go. And she saw, I think, about 3 or 4 passes in a row where Ter Stegen speared it right through the middle to Robert Lewandowski, basically bypassing that midfield and starting the moves from that point, and Lewandowski bringing it down and bringing others into play. And actually, Xavi, I asked Xavi about this after the game, because I thought it was quite interesting. He said that, you know, we really a really good goalkeeper with his feet, and that it was really quite important for them to take that bit of pressure off. And of course, once they'd scored, I wouldn't say that was it, because I don't think it's done really until they score the second goal at the start of the second half, which is a dreadful mistake from Rodrigo de Paul. And that means that any real reaction with Griezmann on the pitch, with Memphis on the pitch, any real reaction kind of is finished there and then. But also, in fairness to Barcelona, when they score the goal, it's the third good chance in basically 3 minutes. And so Atletico had had, I think, the bulk of the kind of momentum of the game and a territorial advantage, but not really had the incision, not really had the clarity, not really made a huge amount happen. And then in 3 minutes, bang, Barcelona make 3 really, really good chances. You have the Robert Lewandowski ball to Rafinha for the header at the far post. You have the save at the near post that Jan Oblak makes against, I can't remember who it is now, I must confess. I think it's Fermin, isn't it? And Kubasi, another brilliant pass from Kubasi for Fermin. And then, of course, you get the goal. And then when you get the second, that kind of feels like it's it. Just a thing on João Félix, by the way, it was interesting watching him post-game coming up the tunnel. Of course, with the nature of the job I do means that you're in that tunnel area as the two teams come up, and João Félix came up having
Banks swapped his shirt with a teammate. I must confess, I don't know who, because that was out on the pitch. But he waits in the tunnel. He speaks for a long time to Thomas Lemar. Teammates come and give him a hug. Lots of members of staff do. The club's president does, Enrique Cerezo. There's a sense of warmth towards him. And he said after the game, he said, look, this is because these guys know. It's because these guys know. And people on the outside, the fans who whistled him all game, and there was the normal sort of thing, inevitable, really. And I actually sometimes almost would rather not mention it, because I feel like, you know, one dickhead doesn't necessarily speak for a whole set of fans. But, you know, pre-game, for example, his plaque outside the stadium was trashed. Someone burnt a João Félix shirt on top of it. I think that's a bit performative, to be honest, and I'm not always sure that it's worth picking up on. But it's, you know, it happened, and it's part of it, and it's part of that kind of pantomime around him. And João Félix, like, I understand these guys, you know, these guys don't know what happened, so I understand that they're like that, but the people on the inside do, and maybe I'm not the bad guy. Now, obviously, look, we could back away from this and talk about what we were talking about the other day, that this is another very, very good performance for João Félix. I've said before that I think his overall contribution is actually not bad in numerical terms. I think I'd be right in saying that's 9 goals and 5 assists, is it, this season, or 8 and 6 is roughly that, and that's pretty good, and it stands up to most of the other Barcelona players, actually, in terms of the contribution. But of course, we're talking about a player who has a manager who's not playing him all the time, and the fact that he played him tonight because there was that extra motivation, I suppose, if we're going to be picky and critical of this, makes you think, well, so why isn't that there more often? Why isn't that contribution always there? And of course, João Félix has a problem. And that problem is that he still belongs to Atletico Madrid. And in theory, he has to go back to Atletico Madrid, at which point, of course, Atletico Madrid will need to find a solution to his situation. The question is, what is that solution? Which clubs can pay for him? Which clubs have the money to bring him in or to find another loan deal? Now, I'm sure that Barcelona would be tempted to do that loan deal, but there's no determination to do it. It certainly hasn't got a Barcelona coach, Xavi, who really wants him to stay, although, of course, Xavi is not going to be there, although he sort of keeps leaving the door open. And so you still got this situation with João Félix, which is that despite these performances, which are a glimpse of what he can do, although I don't think this was his greatest game tonight, and you know, in the first half an hour, I actually was doing the counting, as you know, I love to do the counting, and he got to half an hour of the game and he only touched the ball 5 times. I think I'm right in saying that the goal is the sixth time he comes in contact with the ball in half an hour. It's not very, very much. And so there's still an issue there. But you know, he won again. He didn't over-celebrate. In fact, he sort of almost didn't celebrate at all, did he? He did a little hop from one foot to the other, and then he kind of got surrounded by teammates, and Fermín López points at him. But João Félix doesn't seem, I don't think, to do any kind of pointed celebration. He'd said in the build-ups of the game that he wouldn't celebrate if he got the goal, but he did get it. It wasn't a big celebration, and it's a really big win for Barcelona. Xavi post-game said, well, why can't we dream? Why can't we dream that this is about the league title, that we can fight for it, not just think about being second? I think this weekend the Real Madrid result at Osasuna probably mitigates against that. But I guess it's 8 points. If they were to win the Clásico, it's 5. I still think that's too much. You know, we're actually quite coming towards the end of the season now. We are in that time when everything starts to feel absolutely decisive. So it probably is beyond them. Xavi, by the way, I asked him the question because, you know, he keeps saying this same line about how it's really improved since I said I was going to go. And he's never really explained that. So tonight I said to him, why? Because obviously the question is why. I mean, if they've improved because they're glad to have seen the back of you, or they've improved because they've got clarity now, or they've improved because it changes the doubts about next year, or they've improved because you've shaken them by saying, look, I'll walk away, I've walked, it's your fault. What is it that's actually, why has it changed? It's one thing to say the results are better since I said this, and actually they're starting to look like they really are, and we were doubtful about this, I think it was recently as a couple of weeks ago, they're starting to look like they really are. I'm not 100% sure about the performances, but there are moments, you know, this is a really big win. The Getafe 4-0 was really big, although I think Getafe were partly to blame for that with the way that they played. But this still doesn't answer the question of why. Why did saying you were going change this? What was it that triggered in the players? But something has been triggered, I think, in some of them. And I think we're seeing something that possibly always happens with Gundogan, which is that performances get better as the season goes on, although he's played a huge amount of minutes and he'll come back from the international break probably on around about 4,000 minutes. Lewandowski is definitely taking a step up. And this brings us back to that question we keep going to, which is that it's not that much wrong with the starting 11 at Barcelona. It doesn't always convince us, but there's not that much wrong with it. There isn't a natural deep midfielder. That is true. At the moment, well, for example, tonight, there wasn't a natural left back. Hector Ford played there when he would rather play on the other side. The right back is a central defender, although he's a very good one. And actually, Koundé's performances are starting to get a little bit better as well. Kubasi is a, you know, is a brilliant emergence for them, really, really important. So I wonder if there is room for a little bit of optimism. Do I think they're going to win anything this year? No, probably not. But they probably will finish second now in La Liga, which I'll be honest with you, a month or so ago, I didn't think was going to happen. In fact, I thought there was half a chance that they would struggle to keep the final Champions League place. I don't think that's going to be the case anymore. Atletico now might. And I think that's really, really interesting in itself and how they respond to that. And I wonder what Girona's run-in will be like now as well. I think they might be in a position where they're having to fight quite hard to hang on. But things are definitely improving for Barcelona. And look, there's no two ways about it. This is a really, really big result. For Atletico, I think it's another sign of their weaknesses, of how poor they were defensively, how porous they are, how many chances they give up. And it's true that this isn't a game that necessarily defines what will happen in the Champions League and what will happen for the rest of the league season, but this is another really big concern for them, and a really, really bad result for them too. Cheerio.
Network.